I still don't see Ian, but I'll keep an eye out on this participant list.
Okay, well, I'm going to call the June Administrative Control Board meeting for the Mountain Region Water Special Service District to order at 6:08 p.m. Do we have any public input tonight? And I don't hear any. Item two on our agenda is the regional water supply rate presentation. That seems like a lot to me, but let's start into it, I guess.
Yep, so I'll just provide a brief intro. Fred Philpotts, VP with Lewis, Young, Robertson, and Birmingham. Lisa, Steve, and I worked closely with Fred over the last couple of months to put this together. We looked at a few different options, all of which arriving at similar answers, which gives me confidence that we're in the ballpark. The numbers are also consistent with where we landed last year. So with that, I'll turn it over to Fred and let him present present his findings. If you're with us, Fred, looks like you're starting to share your screen.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Yes. Yeah, I had my mic on mute. Are you able to see my screen?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe just let me know, my internet connection is causing a little trouble. So I'm going to stop my video and just share my screen here. So yeah, I'm with Lewis, Young, Robertson in Birmingham, and we're a municipal finance and consulting firm, and we do a lot of projects across the state of Utah with bond financing, as well as utility rate analysis and impact fees and economic feasibility, all kinds of stuff in that realm. And our task was really looking at this and this regional water supply analysis and verifying the district's analysis that was done previously and providing an alternative view if necessary with regards to the methodology that is used to calculate a wholesale rate. So our objective was to do that while looking at the forecasted expenses that were provided to us, review of capital improvements, an evaluation of debt service, and looking at an allocation of depreciation within this model. Our objective was to try to create a model that provided for the same or similar metrics that are provided in your retail rate, especially when we look at debt service and coverage ratios, as well as contribution to fund balance and generating sufficient capital within this analysis. So the methodology is summarized on this slide here, or the methodologies that are used for rate studies. There's a cash needs approach, a utility basis approach, or for a lot of entities, it's kind of a combined approach where we look at elements of each of these methodologies and apply one that is applicable or most applicable to the entity. So a cash needs looks at what the actual cash requirements are as it relates to operation expense, any sort of transfers or taxes or other payments, then looking at actual debt service payments, and then funding capital improvements, and that's typically in the year that they're incurred. So if you have a substantial capital investment occurring within the five-year planning horizon, it could influence rates substantially to increase those rates if you want to do a pay-as-you-go, what's called a pay-as-you-go approach. Other entities will layer in additional debt service in some cases that helps smooth that rate, but it's funding those, ensuring that we can fund those capital improvements in the year that they're incurred. the utility basis approach is similar in that it looks at operations and maintenance and other payments, but it differs in that it looks at depreciation within the system and funding depreciation, as well as a return on investment, and making sure that the rate covers contributions in the past made by other users, and it's in essence a repayment of that or a return on that investment that's been made, so that in the future you can continue to maintain that system. We looked at what approach would be best for Mountain Regional Water as it relates to the regional water supply. Due to the limited time frame with regards to this specific rate and the planning horizon, allocating capital improvements in the year that it's incurred created some challenges. It caused the rate to bounce around quite a bit. As a result of trying to fund those capital improvements or for poor service, but amortizing that capital expense and a portion of depreciation to capture some of that investment that's been made within the system as a whole, and ensure that wholesale customers or the regional water supply customers pay for a portion of that investment that's been made within existing assets in the form of depreciation, and to pay for a portion of the future facilities that are going to be constructed that benefit those customers that pay a portion of that. The approach here, again, is that we amortize both of those costs. So depreciation is already an amortized expense based on useful life, and we did the same allocation strategy for the capital component, and basically allocating a year's worth of expense associated with that capital investment to the regional customers, the wholesale customers. So that's the approach. In essence, we're using a modified approach that tweaks that capital improvement allocation and includes some depreciation.
Fred?
The demand, yes.
This is Tim Doherty. Maybe Lisa might be able to chime in on this. Is the approach that we're using, is it a deviation from previous approaches?
Yes, slightly. So are you talking about the initial analysis that was done by staff with regards to this rate?
Well, you go back on the table, you're talking about the approach that you're going to be using. You have two different approaches that you're drawing from, and the proposed approach. The question that I have, is the proposed approach a deviation from previous approaches that were used by the district?
Yeah, as it relates to the previous calculations of the wholesale or regional water supply cost, there is a slight deviation in that we're including the full debt service payment. So that's more of a cash basis approach where we're taking both principal and interest and ensuring that this rate covers the needs, those debt service needs. But it's similar in your previous approach. You did look at including depreciation, a depreciation element. But you did not include any future capital expense. What was included in the previous analysis was a risk variable, an estimate of risk. That was a little more nebulous. And so how we look at it is actually applying metrics to that debt service component and including that capital expense as well as the depreciation. That combination of those variables are what really capture that risk variable rather than a kind of a theoretical risk assessment, which I think was the kind of the basis for the previous, within the previous analysis. That was a little more nebulous. So we tried to
Would you characterize this approach as being more accurate or more conservative?
I don't know that I would categorize it as either of those. It's just maybe a little more accurate and refined on how we apply that risk assessment.
Okay.
So,
this is Bob Neumeister. The risk number that we had in was a way, at least in my mind, of trying to conceptualize the fact that we had a wholesale customer that had a priority basis for delivery of water over our retail customers, and that represented a risk to our retail base that somehow we felt they should be compensated for undertaking, in effect, through the rate that was charged to Summit Water for that priority.
Yeah, and here, you know, that's kind of challenging to quantify. So we shifted away from that and looked at allocating that full debt service expense on a cash basis and then amortizing that capital expense plus depreciation to try to capture that that return on investment or that risk variable within this calculation. So it's shifting from, yeah, that more nebulous approach to try to capture based on some metrics that are a little more understood when we look at rate analysis. So on the next slide, the next couple of slides, I'll show you kind of that principle with regards to the debt service. You know, typically we look at covering 1.25 times our debt service payment. And so we apply that variable here in this analysis to say, you know, wholesale customers, the regional customers are going to provide that same type of coverage and pay for 1.25 times the debt. And that that contribution feeds into the whole retail rate model from that coverage metric, which is a standard metric and part of your debt service coverage ratios on your existing bonds. So it ties it to something that's a little more specific in the rate analysis rather than a generic risk assessment. So look obviously at the demand or allocation at 700 acre feet, and then that declines to 75 acre feet in 2025, and then it rebounds post 2025. But that regional water supply, that demand variable, is what we used for our allocation strategies for determining what cost we will apply to this analysis. And so you can see on the table, there are several percentages, several strategies that we used that were specific to each of the cost items that we analyzed. These look complex, but they're similar to what was utilized in the original analysis that that was completed previously. There is some deviation as we looked at, again, debt service, looking at the different variables of demand for the specific capital improvements or the specific bonds. So those strategies are defined here. In essence, what we looked at is the regional water supply as a percent of total demand, as a percent of treated demand through the distribution system, as a percent of the culinary and treated demand, and then there's subcomponents with regards to the Mountain Regional Interconnect. There's a specific demand variable for that, that specific cost component. And then with regards to Lost Canyon cost allocation, as a result of the agreement with Park City to allocate a percentage of that cost directly to Park City, we had to create a strategy that allocated regional demand as a percent of total less that Park City demand. That's a little confusing there, but in essence, we're isolating the cost allocation from Lost Canyon to the regional water supply with the assumption that Park City is going to cover a percentage of that. It's the approximate percentage is 43% of that Lost Canyon cost. And then we did have a no cost allocation. We removed that. All of the cost is now being allocated in this equation, but we did have that there when we looked originally at including or excluding depreciation or any of the other costs. But those are the main strategies, and you can see the percentages there. What those represent, again, is the regional water supply demand as a percent of that overall demand variable that we're using for each of those strategies. You can see that most of them decline, that percentage declines. All of them decline over time as a result of the change in that water demand for regional water supply. As that declines, then the percentage allocation matches that change in the demand variable. So here's a summary of the analyzed expense. This is a very brief summary. If you looked at the report, you can see all of the details with regards to each of the cost buckets, so to speak, that were included in the analysis and how those were allocated and what strategy was used for each of those. This is the total analyzed expense based on the Lost Canyon cost, the percentage of that Lost Canyon that's being allocated to regional water supply, as well as treatment expense, our distribution cost, the debt service expense, and including a 1.25 times coverage variable there to, in essence, capture some of that risk element within this equation. And then we also include, again, the amortized capital projects and the depreciation expense. Those are all then apportioned to the regional water supply cost structure based on those strategies and the percentage proportionality for each of those specific line items. So the next slide then shows the total allocated cost. So of the, I'll bounce real quick to show you the 2021 variable. You can see 2021 is about $5 million in total analyzed expense. We then look at the allocated cost for 2021 is about $1.1 million that's allocated to that 700 acre feet. That produces a cost per acre foot of almost $1,600, slightly under. Then we add the Weber Basin lease fee of $383.12. That gives us a cost, combined cost per acre foot of $1,974.90. And then we calculate that on a 1,000 gallon ratio for a fee of $6.06 is the calculated. We then kind of round those variables there on the recommended rate, so round it up to about 610. And then we grow that over time to reach a fee of $7.89 by 2027. Then you can see demand disappears in 2028 for the regional water supply. That rate goes away for those last two periods of the pro forma. Typically, when we look at a rate setting policy, we typically look at a 5-year, but we've provided the full analysis through 2029 in the report and in the presentation to show what that looks like beyond 2025, showing that the rate would continue to have to tick up a little bit to reach the target of about 120 days of working capital. It drops a little bit below that. So you can see the bottom two rows. Those represent an estimated contribution of, so in essence, regional water supply.
Fred, I think we lost you. I lost you. Can anybody else hear Fred?
Not me.
No.
Lisa, this is dark water. Some water is treated water, correct?
See those?
This is treated water.
All the water, in other words, they don't get any groundwater per se. They get only treated water.
Correct.
Yeah. Water through Signal Hill.
Yep. We're saying everything is coming through the Signal Health Treatment Plant.
Right. Right. That's what I thought.
And what Fred was kind of finishing there with is that what we had talked about is that the kind of thinking back to the master agreement, the 5-year window is the contractual window. Weber Basin expects 10-year projections on previously on water supply. Darren Hess with Weber Basin called about a week ago and said that they had reviewed the master agreement in more detail again. And basically their expectation at the end of this year is that we provide a 10-year look forward on both the amount of water supplied and the cost, the projected cost of that water. And then all of the water in the 5-year period, including the cost, would be a contractual obligation. So with that in mind, our directive to Fred was to approach that similarly with this rate study to show 10-year projections on what this cost might look like, where the 5-year window becomes a locked-in rate. And we felt it appropriate that we reach that 120 days cash on hand by that 5th year. So that's why you can see there in 2025, that's where we first hit that 120 days cash on hand. The 2026 and 2027 rates, projected rates there, would not be contractual at the end of this year. They'd be projected, and we would review those as we go forward.
I'm back on. I lost you guys for a minute. Sorry.
It's okay, Fred. I was just trying to summarize kind of your the concept there on the cash on hand.
Okay. So, yeah, that Scott summed it up perfectly. There may be some adjustments that get made in those final years there, but we're pretty close with regards to that rate for 26 and 27 of achieving that 120 days of cash on hand. Again, this is the regional water supply analysis is somewhat unique because, again, we're allocating on a cash basis with a blended utility basis. So we're taking, in essence, non-cash items like depreciation and then amortizing capital expense and including that as a cost variable here. The reality is in any given year, there may be higher or lower expenses than that. And so there is some volatility here, which is, again, why we want to ensure that we have some contribution to fund balance built into this equation to capture some of that volatility with regards to predicting the future, because it is uncertain. So
I do have one question about, so total demand, chugging along, we know they're going to cut it, cuts in 225, and then it shoots up again in 2026, and then down again in 2027, which sort of says that even though they're not taking a lot of water in 2025, we still have to hold capacity in order to make 300 acre feet available in 26. And therefore, it seems to me like we should have a standby charge in there as well. Is that sort of incorporated, Fred?
Yeah, well, that is, the again, the reason why we have the 1.25 times coverage as well as the allocation of depreciation is it is it is accounting for basically a surplus, a contribution to fund balance, and generating additional revenue above the direct expense under a cash basis. So I don't know that I would have an additional standby fee on top of what is calculated in this analysis, because we've added metrics that that add some of that that risk variable into this equation.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And Bob, as a reminder, so the reason that we see that you know, that jump in 2026, it may not be intuitive from the rate study here, is that if you are to trend both the settlement and the regional water supply volumes with respect to time, the cumulative amount of water that we're providing over time, that amount of water continues to decline. So what you're seeing there is in 2025, that's the last year of the settlement water. So we're able to, we're not providing more water in 2026 than we are in 2025. It's just that more of that water is eligible for this regional water supply rate.
Got it. Okay.
And you could have, Scott, in essence, you could theoretically not utilize all of that, right, for regional water supply?
Yeah, that's correct. And again, 2026 is just a projection at this point, right? So that's what we believe that we'll have available, and it'll be up to the district at the end of 2021 to decide, is that water that they want, you know, that we want to make available or not.
Gotcha.
So, this shows again that smooth rate based on that combined approach or methodology that we've utilized, and the performance metrics based on that days of cash target amount. When we then look at a comparison. On this slide, what we wanted to look at is saying, then comparing to your baseline, which is the adopted regional water supply rate, starting at the $5 in 2020, and then going to $5.65 in 2021, $6.15 in 2022, and then to $6.40 in 2023. There is no additional rate policy beyond that 2023 that with regards to escalating that rate, so I kept it at that 640. You could have additional rate increases beyond that, but I just capped it at that 640 and then compared the revenue generation under that baseline scenario of current adopted rates to the revised rates based on that calculation within this analysis. You can see that obviously, there's a deficit under the baseline scenario. We're not generating as much revenue or matching that cost allocation strategy as defined in this analysis. So it produces a deficit in 2021 of about $100,000. Then it declines a little bit. And as demand declines, then that deficit also decreases. So some of that has to do with declining demand over time. But then also as the rate, your baseline rate ticks up a little bit, it skinnies that, narrows that that difference down a little bit. But cumulatively speaking, from 2021 through 2025, we have a $260,000 deficit. In essence, that we're in essence saying we're not covering the full allocated cost under this approach. So that cost would have to be made up within your retail rate structure, which is what would happen if the baseline scenario is adopted then or maintained. Then, you're in essence your retail rate customers are making up that difference with regards to these two scenarios.
You know what, I think, Fred, it's Mike, I think there was a lot of sensitivity to that. You know, we talked about subsidizing these rates, and this is what I wanted to make sure that, you know, we looked at the sort of the impact to the rate payers and to look at the rates that were going to be required without the sale of the regional water, and then to look at the rates that would that the regional water would need to have applied to not impact the rate payers.
Yeah, and I have that plugged in. So yeah, this is basically now a subcomponent of your retail rate model. And when I look at that difference between those scenarios, it does show an impact. So
subsidy.
Yes. Yeah. So if we use your baseline, it shows your fund balance declining more rapidly. The challenge is, you know, this is a small component. It's maybe 10. Well, 10 to 15% of your revenue. So, looking at your retail rate model, I'm showing a total of about $11.3 million worth in 2020 of total revenue generation. But the challenge, ultimately, the challenge is there's probably a need for rate changes within your retail rate as you move forward, regardless of what you do here. With regards to the wholesale or the regional water supply, so that was some difficulty we had. It's difficult to quantify necessarily this specific impact. What I do show is when I plug it into your retail rate under your baseline scenario. So assuming you keep the rates as previously adopted with the cap at $6.40, your working capital, that days of cash on hand number drops to negative 58 days. So that's...
sorry to interrupt, Fred.
Yeah.
But the way I interpret it is, tell me how I've got this wrong, is what you're combining here is the revenue from the settlement water with the revenue from the additional water. And
yes,
when you blend those two together, what you're really saying is on a combined basis, the ratepayers are subsidizing the combined basis, which really means that we're subsidizing the settlement water, not the regionalization water, so to speak, not the portion over and above that.
I kept the settlement water.
Settlement water is, you know, is under $5 the whole time, right?
Yes, yeah, and that hasn't been that's a constant in this analysis. So I keep that revenue generation from settlement water the same, but there could be, yes, you could have some inequity in that, but the analysis here just takes the proportion of the regional water supply and the cost allocation for just that 700 acre feet and the regional water supply. So it is isolating just the cost allocation for, so if I jump back a slide, two slides, this total allocated cost is just for the regional water.
Yes.
So, but you're right, there could be, similarly, there could be some inequality in the settlement rate, but I didn't touch that. I assume that stays the same in both the baseline scenario and the recommended rate scenario. So this difference or this deficit is really just from the regional water supply. That's just saying that's the deficit from the allocated cost for regional water supply, and we're not meeting that. But it could be worse in essence if our settlement rate, if there's a similar deficit, it would actually make this look worse. You know, our deficit would go up.
Is the settlement water rate fixed, Scott? Is that what you were saying? It's been put on the table?
Yeah, I mean, it's in Fred's model, he has a growth component to it. but it's fixed in its methodology that it's only intended to capture, you know, the costs of that water moving through Lost Canyon in the plant. It's intended to be, you know, punitive may not be the right word, but it's intended to be low-cost water per the agreement.
We're essentially just capturing O&M costs. We can't capture that component. There's no distribution cost that we can.
Right. That might be interesting to the settlement water rate is O&M based.
Yeah, we're not, you know, we're not, the settlement water wasn't included in this analysis because it's not something that we're at liberty to change. So, you know, from my kind of simple look at the difference number in that bottom row, it's just simply the difference between the results of this rate study and the directive that we got from council last year to move with this three-step plan that starts at $5 and moves up to $6.40, which was our original target. So what Fred's showing here is that if we stick with that or that plan that we were, you know, asked to move into at the end of last year, our retail ratepayers will subsidize, you know, this regional water supply water to the tune of $260,000 over the next 5 years.
And how did you get that?
It's the sum that Fred shows on his last slide. It's the sum of the 2021 through 2025, correct, Fred? It's the sum of that difference.
Yes. 102 plus 30 plus 40 plus 50 plus 30.
Yeah. So scenario one, the current adopted rates, that's that five, the rate that starts at $5 and moves to $6.40 in 2023. That was the three-step, you know, kind of approach that council wanted to see as part of the budget process last year.
It wasn't based on analysis. It was just purely a negotiated number.
It was. Yeah. That's correct.
Well, I wouldn't call it negotiated. That's maybe a little too...
It was mandated.
Mandated. Yes. That's a better word, Bob.
Yes, I agree. So in scenario two, is that's the result of Fred's rate study here, right? So that difference is just the difference between Fred's recommendation and council's mandate.
I think he got to what we wanted was what are the rates that we need so the ratepayers don't subsidize the regional supply rate.
Yeah. I think what we have to be careful of is this blended approach, again, allocates and the reason why I'm saying this is kind of a little bit of a devil's advocate approach on what the county council might look at, which is we have a short-term window here with regards to the supply of regional water through 2027, and then it's done. Whereas, you know, your retail rate is evaluated forever, you know, evaluating investment and expense and when you need it. There's no end to that analysis. So here the challenge is allocating that cash-based expense as well as benefit from the system. So if I were, you know, I guess if I were arguing from the other side of this coin and trying to reduce the rate and pull that down. Well, what we've included in this combined approach is depreciation, which is a non-cash item, as well as amortized capital expense, which is kind of playing around with an actual cash item. So we're basically saying, well, rather than making the wholesale or this regional water supply cover the actual cost in the year it's incurred, because there's an expiration to this rate, we've amortized that and said you're going to pay for a year's worth, in essence, or your that specific year's worth of that capital investment. So because that depreciation is a non-cash item, you could see that and say, well, let's remove that from the equation because we don't really have to pay that right now. Because we've got some estimate of capital expense. Well, the challenge with that in my mind is that does have to be paid at some point. It may not be paid in that exact year, But the reason depreciation is included is because your assets are falling apart and will have to be replaced.
The useful life is being used up.
Yes, the useful life is being used up. And the wholesale customer, the regional supply customer, is going to pay for that use of that system in that given year and pay your retail rate payers for that. So that can go into the rate model and then repair that asset at a future time when it's needed.
Absolutely.
So that I think we want to, you know, we just have to be careful with this blended approach that there may be a desire to push that down because it's not a cash item, but it is a cost that is incurred. It's just at a different point in time than maybe this wholesale or regional rate analysis, but we still want to capture the benefit of that in this equation. And that's what that's doing, is saying we have to pay the equivalent of that cost back to the system.
As it uses up useful life.
Yes, yeah. So so that's what I mean when the actual contribution of fund balance is going to be different, because that depreciation is a non-cash item, but it will have to be expended at some point. So we're contributing the equivalent of this cash balance, assuming we have to replace that the regional water supply has to pay off their portion of that depreciation, as well as the actual expense of debt and O&M that is incurred in that specific year. So we'll have to, you know, if that question gets brought up, we'll have to address that in that way. But I just wanted the board to be aware of that, what's happening in the model. So that gives you an idea, as Scott has indicated. It's coming in, at least in that initial year, to an approximation of what the district calculated under a different methodology, a slightly different methodology. When we applied our methodology in this blended approach, we got a similar allocation. So that's comforting to know that we weren't that far off. And then showing that escalation over time, that the rate does need to go up to continue to capture that expense as well as contribute to fund balance. So,
Fred, does the retail rate have an escalation built into it? You know how we usually raise them, I don't know, 2 or 3%?
I believe so, yes. I think there are some escalation variables, right? Maybe Steve or Scott are better suited to answer that. But
built into the rates in the model?
Yes, I believe in future years. Let me just double check.
I think it's a 2% rate increase as we get out into the coming years, like 2022, 23, we'll probably need a 2%.
Yeah. Right. I think I heard you guys say it was hard to bring in the need for those future rate increases, but yeah, if we've built in something historically that we've had, I think that's prudent. That's
and Mike, this, the way that I like to think about how this regional supply rate interacts with the retail rates is that the revenue from this becomes an input into the retail rate model. And so this revenue, you know, shows again as an input, and then we're looking at that that debt service coverage ratio, targeting that 1.25. And when we get down to that number or below, then we need to consider a rate increase. So, you know, the retail rate increases are separate. You know, from this analysis is my point, I guess.
So I kind of did something on the fly, I guess. So I hope you're okay with this, Scott. But there was a question on there was a question on the impact to the kind of the on the retail side. So in the model I was showing on the retail side, a 4% increase in 2022, then that 2% increase starting 2023, 2024, 2025, it just kind of continues on. If, you know, cycling between these two scenarios, the baseline under the adopted rate and this calculated rate, instead of a 4% increase in 2022, it would go up to about a 4.6% increase to achieve the same benchmark that we would have gotten if we adopted the calculated rates from this wholesale analysis. So it's, like I said, it's not a huge impact on the retail side because there's a bigger base there to work with, but it does result in an increase. If we were to achieve the same target, we'd have to have another 0.5% increase in that year. So it does result in change, but that's doing this on the fly right now. So that's obviously subject to change, but it gives you an idea.
It kind of makes sense that it's not a big portion of things.
Yeah.
It's have a dramatic impact to the retail rate. So,
yes.
Okay. Well, I think that's a really good analysis. Brad, Scott, are you happy with that? What's our next step?
Yeah, I'm happy with it. Certainly let Lisa and Steve share their comments. Do you guys want to chime in and then we'll talk about process?
Sure, I'll chime in. You know, I like the way that Fred has presented this. We were always working with kind of the next year, and I like that we've taken this multi-year approach and you know, we're able to better, you know, give Weber Basin some better planning tools and obviously us some better planning tools for the future. The one thing we haven't talked about, which, you know, I think we did do a deeper dive on, was the distribution system. Scott did some modeling and we wanted to make sure that we were capturing the correct component of that distribution cost in order to deliver the water, which we had kind of, you know, been making some educated guesses, but we hadn't really, you know, nail down and refine that assumption. So we've done that now with this model. So, you know, I feel really good about the refinements we've made and this multi-year approach, and then also tying it to our retail rate, showing exactly what our customers will be subsidizing at a rate that's something lower than what this approach is suggesting. So I think it's going to be just a great tool for us to have going forward. I've enjoyed working with Fred, worked with him before. I think the district has worked with him in the past, and we've used Zion on some other projects, but it's nice to get insight, you know, from someone else coming in. So I think we have a good product here and something I feel good about going to the council with.
Yes, I feel the same way, you know, what Lisa was saying. I think Fred did a nice job of analyzing our expenses, and we did a nice job of then working as a team to figure out what would make the most sense, because it is kind of that different environment where, you know, this relationship will moonlight in a few years, so you have to look at it a little differently. So that took a little extra thinking, but I think, what? Oh.
Did anybody else lose Steve?
No, I can hear him.
Okay. Oh, sorry. So, yeah, I think it was a good exercise. I like what we've learned, and I like the end result. I'll summarize it real quick like that.
So, Steve, the $260,000 is a cumulative deficit over the number of years. What is that as a percentage of the overall cumulative revenues? Are we looking at something that's 2%?
Yes. If you look at cumulative revenues, it's actually 1.25. Let me see. Okay. Whoops, no, that's actually, let me take the sum of, that was just in a single year. This.
Tim, maybe another way to look at that is it's a 3% increase to our retail rate customers for 1 year, more or less. So.
Really?
In theory, like how Fred was saying, maybe we drop 0.5% off our rate increases over several years, or it'd be as if we were able to delay 1 3% increase 1 year. Does that make sense?
K, Do we need a recovery plan? I mean, where does this $259,000?
We're saying we want to adopt these rates so we don't miss out on that revenue.
We don't want to miss out on the revenue and adopt the rates, but when I take a look at the number that we have here, and I know that we're working on a bunch of theoreticals and stuff, and I read Lisa's report on there, on any given month, we have swings of revenue that are greater than this one way or another in one month,
right,
just because of the weather. And so I think...
Tim, I can't hear you. Can anybody else hear Tim?
No, I can't.
No, I can't.
No, I can't either.
Well, I think he's got a good point that, I mean, $250,000, I mean, we've got that variability.
Yeah, but don't forget, we're also subsidizing settlement water. Because all we're getting paid for is our variable processing costs on settlement water. Now, that's a deal that the county handed us.
Right. You
know, we're all there mucking around and trying to take over some of water.
Yeah.
The point I was trying to make here is it looks like it's a kind of a de minimis amount, but if we have analysis to back it up to try to capture it, we should take it.
Yeah, I think that's the idea. Is under the current schedule, you miss out on it, even that amount. I mean, that's the idea, is to ensure that we capture as much as we can. From a justified analysis within this regional water rate. Otherwise, it's made up somewhere else. Even if it's de minimis, it's still made up somewhere else in the system. So
that's politics.
Yes.
Okay.
So, Mike, to answer your question about process, where do we go from here?
Yeah.
If we do want to move forward with capturing this, next step is to have a work session with council. Present, you know, have the same presentation. We're going to have Fred help us with that one as well. And then the meeting to follow that one would be a stakeholder meeting with, you know, with myself, a member from the board, Summit Water, Weber Basin, and membership from the county council, similar to some of the meetings we had at the end of last year. And again, present the same information to that stakeholder group. And then we would move to adopt these rates as part of our budget process at the end of, in the fall of this year.
And then the council might just say, stick with the rates.
Yes, they might do that.
But all of which is okay, but we will have represented our ratepayers in an appropriate fashion.
So we're going to approach it as a, hey, we want to change the rates the county council set.
Yeah, I think, you know, even as part of the council, those meetings at the end of last year, I suggested that we get a third party, we get an independent view on this. And the council members that, you know, mandated we go with the rate schedule that we've talked about or that was adopted, you know, said that was a good idea, that they'd be interested to see those results. So I think all along, you know, I think this is the right approach. To Tim's point, yeah, it's not a lot of money. You know, based on my quick math, if we're looking at pure accumulation of our expense budget over the next 5 years, it's less than a percentage point. But as Bob said, we're here to represent the ratepayers, and I think it's the right thing to do.
Well, not only that, but keep in mind where we moved from to get to $5, right? And you know, if we don't want any backsliding on the $5, that's for sure.
You're right, Bob. So are there any further questions?
The next step is to approach it as a rate increase, a formal process.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm going to approach it that we've completed the rate study that we promised to look at this regional water supply rate. We need to present a five-year, you know, contractual rate schedule to Weber Basin at the end of the year. And this is the rate schedule that we're recommending.
Yeah. That's one good side of Weber Basin's agreements.
It's that cumulative deficit of $260,000. I mean, we've maybe spent a similar amount of effort to get here. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what we'll take the step and talk.
Solidifies the $5 if nothing else, right?
Yeah.
So it keeps that.
I think to your point exactly, Bob, that there was no guarantee that the council was going to actually let us go to the 565 and the 615 and the 640. Now right. We kind of have a, you can't not at least do that. So
that's,
in my opinion,
helps our path forward there for sure.
Seems logical, but
yeah. Are there any further questions for Fred?
I'm good.
All righty. Thank you. We'll just be in touch on the path forward.
All right. Thanks, Fred. We appreciate you joining us tonight.
Okay.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks, Fred.
All right. I'm going to give Fred just a minute to sign off here and release his screen, and then just bear with me as I work to be able to share mine. So just bouncing back to the agenda
that was,
here. Go ahead, Mike.
That was 3 minutes short of an hour, so that was a pretty good estimate.
Trying to keep us on track, Mike.
So item three, do we need to go into executive session tonight?
Yes, just very briefly. I'm looking at the attendance list here, and everybody is authorized to be a part of that discussion. So I'm going to switch the tape here.
So do we need a motion?
So moved to executive session.
Bob and Tim is a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Yeah, that was unanimous. Let's go into executive session.
Hey, whoever's the host on the call, I've switched over to a phone connection because I'm having kind of marginal internet.
That's me, Tim. Yep, I can let you in. So we're just starting the tape again. Back in open session, I'm going to admit Tim in with his telephone. You with us now, Tim, on the phone?
Yep.
That's a bad echo. Maybe turn your mic off on your other device. Okay. So item four, financial management. Lisa, you want to, and Steve, would you take us through May?
Yep. Can I get the screen?
Absolutely. I'm going to stop right now.
Oops. Okay. So we, in the midst of COVID-19, we had our hottest, driest spring yet, at least in the last since I've been here. So currently our change in net position, our net income is $62,000 positive at this point. Generally, our budget is projecting almost $500,000 loss. We've made that up primarily in revenue with about retail water sales higher to date of $276,000. Promontory Golf Course was $54,000. In our development related collections, we're higher by 50,000. Impact fee revenue is in there, but impact fees are essentially on budget right now. This is mostly connections. Even though we're seeing lower impact fees from the Silver Creek, from using prepaids back here, we are still having connections come on. So our connection revenue is higher than we had budgeted for. Like we've talked about, Park City has taken less water. 2 months they were kind of down, but they are ramping up and have been taking quite a bit of water. And we're still hearing from them that they will be taking their full allocation of 2,900 acre feet. So to be continued if we end up making up that difference by the end of the year. Expenses are a little bit lower too. We've, you know, been really mindful of spending these last couple months, and we were anticipating our revenue might come in. And obviously we've had lower usage at the Lost Canyon area as we move to kind of use our ground wells plant. And then we've had lower repair and maintenance costs at Lost Canyon. I think that this will come back as we get into our season right now. So I expect us to get closer to budget on expenses going forward. Our cash is in a good position, primarily up in our operating cash and reserves, almost $300,000, and that's due to greater collections. You saw in the report, we were a little bit nervous about cash collections, but we had an uptick in May, so people are paying. We've also, and we'll talk about it later, but we had our lien letter go out, and people have been making payments after we sent those letters, so we're collecting some of that older debt that's been, that not older debt, the older receivables that have been sitting out there. We also transferred some money into the operating fund from our treatment plant reserve fund for the membranes that we paid for. So that was another little reason for the increase there. Reserves held by the trustee were just normal payments for our 1/12 of our debt. And we had a little bit of an uptick in restricted cash. That was due to the community water construction loan funding. We had another tranche of money. They transferred some more money of that construction in. And so we had a little up there. And then we offset that with the membranes that we just paid for, about $133,000. So for...
Okay, question?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So why are we at 269 days instead of 324 a year ago? Like, did we have a big expense? Like, what made the difference between last year and this year?
Last 2 years ago, so not last summer, but the summer before, was very hot and dry. So we had really high water sales then that carried over. As you'll remember, last year was cooler. Revenue wasn't nearly as high as it was the year before. So that brought our operating cash balance down.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, 324 is almost approaching. If we get to a year, we need to make a decision the board needs to make a decision of what we're going to do with that cash. And our policy minimum is 120. So we should be kind of bringing that down. We don't want to be sitting on a bunch of cash we're not using. So we're still in a good position and overall, you know, 209 days, but not at that really high position that we were at least not yet. It depends on what the rest of the summer looks like.
Make us look like our rates are too high.
Yeah, it could. And that's kind of we've been talking about. There doesn't seem to be an average anymore. It seems to be really, really wet or really, really hot. So we kind of have these years that are spiking on either end. And it's, you know, after coming off three really hot years and then to have that one wet summer last year, and we were going through the bond refinance, we were being really conservative on our revenue, or, you know, we wanted to not, you know, get into where we're forecasting too much revenue and then not being able to deliver. So I think, and we'll do this again as we get into the rate study and predict and looking at our budget for 2021, is I think we can probably be a little bit more aggressive on our revenue. You know, I anticipate we're going to have another hot, dry year this year. Our cash reserves are in a good position. So I think we may be able to forecast a little bit more revenue. And we tried to do that. And, you know, I'll say Scott and Green was pretty, pretty conservative and maybe why we're in the place that we are right now. So we're trying to level that playing field a little bit so that we're not sandbagging budget too much on revenue. But we're trying to get better in our forecasting on that and having these kind of really, really wet years and some really hot, dry years. It's going to help us try to predict that a little bit better.
Lisa, is there any reason that we could not have I'll say it in quotes, a dividend to the ratepayers at some point in time? Just rebate them, you know, a certain amount of money, $25 a meter or something? You know, whatever the right number is, you know.
Yeah, we could do that. You know, right now we've got some additional debt that we could pay down on the 2014 bonds that's coming up. We also, and what we talked about is, you know, we've been pretty far above our 1.25 coverage. We're trying to bring that down because we have cash reserves. We don't need to get very far above that 1.25 coverage because we have the cash reserves to do as a pay-as-you-go for capital projects as we've accumulated some cash. So it's kind of like I was saying, we don't need to budget going forward very far above the 1.25. I think we can be more aggressive there and get a little bit closer to it. And I think we can forecast revenue to be a little bit higher than we have in the past. Based on what we've seen, I think Steve would agree with me on that. So as we move into this next budget cycle and start looking at revenue projections for next year, we're going to take some hard looks at usage patterns. And especially, I mean, we also brought on 500 new customers that we had no idea what their usage pattern was going to be. And we're still trying to see that because we had so many unmetered connections. And now that we have all those meters in, we've got better usage data. Now that we have all the Badger meters almost all in. So I think we're going to have a much better platform and able to narrow down the focus on where our revenue projections are going to come going forward.
Well, it's a happy problem to have.
Yeah. I think it's a good problem to have in light of the problems other people are having right now.
Right.
You may just have to be comfortable if one year we're actually under budget on revenue, though. As we get a little more aggressive, you'll have to forgive us if one year we're actually a little under our estimates. But I think that since we do have the cash reserves, we can err on that side for a little while. So that'll be good.
Which will also, you know, we don't want to have to do a rate increase, you know, in light of the economic environment that we're in. And I think we're okay to push that down the road a little bit. So look, customer growth through May, we've had 42 new connections. Our average at this time is right around 46, so we're a little under. Total collections, we're at 185, and our four-year average is 430. Knew that. With the current economic environment, we're still seeing plans being submitted, and we are still on budget with impact fees. But if we make budget, I think it'll be very, very close. You know, it might not be the 300,000 I was thinking we might see. I think, you know, maybe we could get closer to that $500,000 number. But I still think we're going to fall short here on impact fees. Let's see. And the per connection, you know, the decreases we're seeing here, like we've talked about before, it's just because prepaids are getting used. So that's bringing the average number down. We didn't have any promontory lot assessments last month. So we're a little bit behind there. We're at 9 year to date, and normally we're kind of averaging 13. Here's the water consumption table. You'll see we were way above our four-year average, 119% above our four-year average. I think 2018, we kind of started the year early, but we even blew 2018 away. I mean, people were generally, the 53.6 million gallons is more of a June usage number for Mountain Regional Water customers. It's a number. It's not your typical May, spring number. So we definitely, everyone turned on their sprinklers early. Golf course, same thing, 2.6 million. Generally, they're averaging five, you know, for the last 4 years. Park City has been down. We've talked about that. Year to date, we are 46% average Mountain Regional customers. Primarily, you know, we talked about residential. We know we picked up community water. That's contributing to the additional usage. And then the UOP has also ticked up this year, the winter time. So that's kind of driving this variance. Promontory, that's pretty early. You know, that will level off as we move through the summer. And I think Park City will pick up too. And Summit Water is above a little bit just with that additional water they're taking in 2020. Capital projects, nothing new with community water. We've kind of expended that amount. It's been stable. J-Rock is starting, I believe, is starting or has started on the work in the community water area, that $600,000, almost $600,000 encumbered number that we have there. The Glen Wild line has been completed, and the Cove and Nugget Well and the Willow Creek Interconnect will be completed this summer. Along with the Glen Wild pump upgrades, they'll also be done. Did find some savings in the general system improvements. Some of the projects we were going to do, we've held off, and we had $6,000 in savings from Glen Wild Pump Station. That's, we're going to do that internal, that work internally rather than going out to do that. So we had some savings there that were able to help allocate to some of the other areas. The Sunspark project began. It's going to be completed in August. It's going really well. I think we got the really sticky part, I think, is behind us. And right, Brian, is that right? I don't know if Brian's. But this is still going, moving forward. And we were based in Interconnect. I think we made our first payment for that the other day. I think substantial completion is going to be in 2020, but some will roll 2021. And we have determined that the treatment plant chlorinator upgrade we're not going to need this year. So we've reallocated some funds there. And we're holding off on the Kilby pump upgrade until next year. And then our land acquisition for the office site is also postponed. We did receive our new truck, and the other office vehicle will be received in September. We did add a couple new schedules to the report, just kind of some topics we've been touching on lately regarding cash collections. So Steve created this report. We can kind of show our AR, our AR balance with our collections. And we can kind of see our uncollected balance here. Gray was trending up a little bit during that February-April timeframe, started the trajectory down. So hopefully that continues as we get some of these older balances collected, as we do that certified lien process. Here's another graph that we look at. We've maybe shared before with you during the budget cycle, but this just kind of shows our retail water sales. Here's 2020 with May where we were, and here we are usually down here. So it was a significant spike. You can kind of see the general trend here with this line, in the summer month. And then the last one here kind of gives you a snapshot of May. This is just May. So you can see the water sales broken down by category, and really our residential, you know, over is really driving the variance for this month. And as we see some commercial being down and government, which we would expect, but really the magnitude of residential outweighs these smaller dollars that we see in those categories. So that's all I had. There are any questions?
Great work, Lisa.
Okay, thank you. That's all Steve and I have for finance.
Okay, well, yeah, that sounds really pretty good considering everything. Item five, general manager comments. Scott, looks like you've got some renewable energy coming.
Yeah, exactly. So on one hand, I'm thrilled that communities and municipalities are heading in this direction. On the other hand, it leads to expenses that we certainly need to be cognizant of. So just cutting right to the chase, you can ignore my recommendation in my staff report. Because there's really not a decision that we're making tonight. There's no decision from me or from the board that needs to be made. Quite simply, and is everybody familiar with the background here? So, go ahead, Mike.
Well, kind of. It's like we couldn't install enough solar power to run all these pumps. It's just not a very viable situation for
it. Yeah, so back in 2017, the council passed a resolution that said all Summit County government operations would be net renewable energy on the electrical side by 2032. And by definition, Mountain Regional is a part of Summit County's government operation. So at that point, Summit County made the promise to the community, and they started the process of, well, how are they going to get there? They began essentially negotiating with Rocky Mountain Power. They began working with some of the other neighboring community, building partnerships because they quickly realized, and the other communities realized, that you have to get a project of substantial size to where this begins to pencil out and to reach rates that are on par in the playing field of current electrical rates. So again, that began in 2017, and the timeline, originally 2032, has moved up significantly. So the goal, where they're at today with negotiations would place this renewable power in service in 2023. And part of the reason for that was through negotiations with Rocky Mountain Power, there's a component of the rate that is essentially termed as the avoided cost. And that, without getting into a ton of detail, has to do with the expiration or bringing existing dirty power facilities offline as they bring new clean power online. That avoided cost portion of the rate was expected to climb significantly over the next few years. So it's one of the reasons that the timeline has moved forward to get this renewable power online sooner. So negotiations have been carrying on now for a bit. The original proposal to Mountain Regional about a year ago was that we would pay about a 1.5% increase in our overall electrical expenses on an annual basis. And that number has increased now to about 2.5% in the most recent proposal. To my understanding, that number has not been nailed down yet. It could potentially grow further. What does 2.5% mean? 2.5% means it's about $20,000 a year of additional electrical expenses for the district starting in 2023. And I've done a significant amount of research and just kind of trying to better understand this over the last week or so since I wrote my original staff report. As further background, I was contacted at the end of May, certainly since our last board meeting, with hey, this is the number. I need a head nod by June 3rd, and what do you think? And, you know, again, at the end of the day, this isn't a Mountain Regional decision. The county council, you know, passed this resolution back in 2017. This train is leaving the station. We're on it. And, you know, from my standpoint, I'm trying to understand, you know, how we, you know, how we essentially make up having to pay for that additional cost. So, Bob, I know you had some questions that you wanted to talk about. That's kind of my quick update at the moment is that I am the county council last week agreed to continue the process. They had a lot of concerns over the term. I haven't mentioned that the term of this contract is 20 years. So we pay that additional 2.5% above today's current power rates. You know, it's an additional 2.5% of our expenses. But the idea is that we follow the current power rates and any rate increases that are adopted in the future. And there's this additional layer of costs that are added to that to be able to get that clean power. So council has a lot of concerns over the duration of the period, duration of the term. I think they're in a position where they, you know, they believe that this is as good of a deal as they can get here in the near term to be able to maintain the, you know, the promise that they've made to the community. If they were to pull out, it could potentially jeopardize the entire deal for the other partnerships due to, again, you know, getting to that sufficient size of a project. So there's some political wins there as well. You know, so again, council at this point is moving forward. We can expect to see those costs, additional costs starting in 2023. So, Bob, do you want to chat about some of your concerns and comments?
Well, you know, I don't know where all this will end up. I agree with you that, you know, we're just a flea on the dog's tail at this point, albeit that we are by far the largest electrical user under that umbrella that the county is describing. Yep. Okay, by far.
70%
of the rest
uses.
Of them put together.
Yeah.
Okay. I just had questions. I mean, first of all, you have a special purpose corporation being formed to be the provider of this particular stuff. So it's a standalone, isolated economic entity, as best I can tell, which means nobody's standing behind it. So the day somebody comes through with a bunch of rocks and breaks all their arrays, they're out of business, which may be a bit of an extreme statement, but I'm concerned about what the, you know, the viability of the entity is. My understanding is that Rocky Mountain Power is simply a conduit here. They're simply saying, we'll take their power into the grid.
Yep.
And we'll give you a check mark by your name that says you're, you know, the green machine over here. And, you know, but if this company doesn't deliver, Rocky Mountain Power is going to turn around and say, well, you know, maybe we can supply you, maybe we can't, right? Maybe we have to brown you guys out for a little bit because we don't have the power sources anymore to meet this demand. So I'm concerned about reliability. You know, I mean, it's one thing if the county has to close their office building one day a week. We're not going to shut the water down one day a week.
Yeah.
And so that's my primary concern. There's a bunch of other little things underneath it that, you know, are ancillary to that. The other side of it is, to me, is the issue of equity, which is how come our ratepayers are paying for all this where all the other users under this agreement are tax-supported entities. Snyderville Basin Rec is tax-supported. Park City Fire Department is tax-supported. The Senior Center or whatever, they're all tax-supported. The government, obviously, is tax-supported. But no, our ratepayers have to absorb all of this. I personally think that we should have a put of the cost back to the county. The benefit is for the county as a whole. you know, and therefore the county as a whole should pay for the whole thing, is my opinion, and spread it over the tax.
Right, there's some subsidization going on here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, everybody else is getting subsidized by the taxpayer, but we're not. So that's a political, philosophical issue, which, you know, will probably be resolved by saying, go away and leave us alone.
What is the benefit to the county?
The county as a whole gets the benefit, right? You know, and when you put county as a whole, keep in mind that our friends on the ski resorts are all, you know, jumping up and down about how they're going to be carbon neutral and all that kind of stuff, and they're turning to the county and saying, how are you going to help us do that? You know, and all that kind of good stuff, right? So, you know, it's a spaghetti bowl of interest and politics and all that kind of stuff. I'm just saying our little strand of spaghetti, you know, is once again, we're subsidizing. We subsidized, grew up when they tried to take over Summit Water. We're subsidizing, you know, the rates we just talked about on the excess water, and now they're asking us to subsidize the Go Green machine.
Everybody that's not a Mountain Regional customer, we're subsidizing.
Yeah, that's right. So that's political. At the end of the day, I don't know that there's anything, you know, to in that for us, you know.
Yeah, they put $20,000 a year on the Mountain Regional ratepayers.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's about what it boils down to. And what I'm concerned about is, you know, there were some other things like, I mean, our system's probably going to grow. I mean, you know, we know they're talking about development out along 40. We know they want to build more hotels and infrastructure around the canyons base. You know, so we're going to have more demand for water. My understanding is that this power is sort of finite, at least in the first, you know, contract layer, right? So maybe we get 100% renewable now, but 5 years from now, we probably won't be 100% renewable because of growth in the system.
Yeah.
And then are we going to be disadvantaged with Rocky Mountain Power when we come to them as a supplicant and say, gee, we, you know, need more power? And they're going to say, yeah, well, you're at the low end of the rate here. So, you know, you pay the most, right?
Yeah. So, you know, you're right, Bob. We've got growth. And also, as part of this analysis, we have some projected energy improvement or, you know, sustainability projects of our own that were calculated into this from to be conservative, because it's, as you alluded to in your note to me, you know, this is a take or pay contract. So we wanted to be conservative about how much power we thought we needed. So when we talk about things like the floating array at the treatment plant, we've talked about arrays on our new tank over here in Silver Creek. We projected some energy reductions as a result of reducing our water losses, all the while keeping the growth in energy demand effectively flat. So, you know, as I look out to 2023, based on current usage or based on the, you know, flat projections, we're, you know, 85% to 90%. You know, we'd be 85% to 90% renewable. As we get out to 2026, we're more like 80% renewable. So where does the other 20% come from? You know, I believe where it comes from is, I don't believe our rate schedules or our it'll be interesting. I don't know how the actual flow of money will happen. If the meters, if the bills, if all of that stuff effectively looks the same. And Summit County, my understanding is they are providing a list of meters that are included in this arrangement. Do we then just get a bill from Summit County? That's, you know, that's a detail that I'm not up to speed on. But, you know, I think to make up the additional 20% for now is just continue to pay, our current bills. The question becomes, well, how do we get to 100% renewable if that's the promise? And one of the ways that they've looked at doing that is by purchasing offsets, RECs as they call them. So essentially, to your point and your note, we are motivated to reduce our energy use, to not have to either purchase more power or purchase expensive offsets. How expensive will those offsets be? That's not defined yet.
Sure. It just feels like, and I don't know, you're closer to it than I am, Scott. It just kind of feels like counties off and running on this parallel universe to us and never bothered to stop and say, hey, how's this going to really affect you guys? It was like, you know, we're over here, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that I was never part of any conversation related to that question, to that question of how is this really going to affect you guys. I was part of conversations related to energy usage projections, that 1.5% number that was kind of thrown around, but I was never involved in any political discussions related to, well, what does this really mean for the county? Well, Mountain Regional, 70% of the county's energy use. Let's talk to Mountain Regional. That would have happened before my time in this position.
Scott, is the power source from Rocky Mountain Power, is it verifiable as being green, or are we just paying more money?
That's a good question, Tim. It's verifiable, I guess, from the standpoint of Rocky Mountain Power is going to have some contract with another entity that we have visibility to, who in theory is building this array. So my gut tells me there's enough traceability of to it, but I don't really know what that paper trail looks like.
I mean, in theory, our power may come from exactly the same place it always has.
Yes.
It could be a coal-fired plant down in Price.
Yep.
So yeah.
All they're going to do is take... They're going to take the power that comes out of the arrays, and they're going to dump it into their grid and, you know, transmit it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. That, you know, the idea is that, we're purchasing this renewable power. So for every kilowatt hour that we use, that kilowatt hour has to be produced somewhere in a, you know, from a renewable source. But where that goes, who knows?
Yeah, it's like money. It's fungible. It goes into the...
We can't trace a direct benefit to our ratepayers, right?
No, I mean, obviously, it goes to the, you know, it goes to the greater ecological community benefit of trying to slow the rate of climate change. And, you know, maybe there's a tangent of that you could tie to water use, but certainly there's no direct line to our ratepayers.
I wonder if they could get Summit Water to participate in these rates.
So one of the things that's in the resolution is that the same mandate is for the entire community-wide renewable energy, and the date escapes me, but. I had a long conversation with Blaine and Dave today talking about this, and we don't know what the community rate is going to look like, right? The feeling today is that this rate is expected to go up, so the county is inclined to try to get this locked in. Does that mean then that the community sees a higher rate? I mean, time will tell. So on one hand, we could say, well, we're subsidizing the community. In 5 years, maybe we look back and say, you know, we got the sweetheart deal.
Okay. Well, I think that's a pretty good update. I don't know that we, do we just cover anything else here?
No, like I said, there's no decision. I just wanted to have an open forum and discuss it with the board, take your comments, and I'll certainly pass those along to Tom the next time that I meet with him. And but again, this isn't, I don't see this as a decision for Mountain Regional.
How is this going to progress at this point? Do you know?
Yes. What I do know is that the head nod from council was for Rocky Mountain Power to continue negotiations with this entity, Bob, who's going to build the array. And the final numbers would be before council here in the near term. I don't know what that means, next few weeks. And then the council would have another decision gate to either say go or no go. If they say go at that point, I believe it's locked in.
I don't know, Blaine, or is Dave on the phone?
Dave's not with us. Blaine is.
Blaine, do you know, does council have to have an open meeting on something like this?
I'm not sure if they, I think before the resolution, they might, but I think they already had an open meeting on it before adopting the resolution to convert to power.
They're just free to go, in effect.
I'm not sure.
We can keep you posted, Bob. If there is an open meeting, we'll let you know.
Okay, thank you.
That's all I have for the group. If there's no further questions on that topic, seeing none, we'll move on. COVID-19 update, just real quick. We have, when the county moved to yellow, the governor's health advisory scale, the office moved to open on limited hours, Monday through Thursday, 8:30 to 5. Marty's team is jockeying back and forth on the days that they're here. So we have one person in customer service per day in the front office. We've got, the typical protections you're seeing around town with plexiglass and things of that nature. The office staff as a whole, our presence is growing, but there's still some remote work, that's being done. We've got some new protocols for our customer service field representatives that are installing new meters in people's homes and things like that. So there's a letter that goes to those folks before the appointments, at the time the appointments are made, and there's specific protocols with respect to the homeowners having the areas cleared and ready for us to be there and for us to get in and out as quickly as we can with common PPE, certainly masks, gloves, booties, eye protection, things like that. So I just learned today that it sounds like the governor has a new executive order that is either imminent or has been released, adjusting the rules on the yellow and green health advisory scales, essentially providing some more flexibility or liberties into the yellow category. And adding some precautions to green, I think, to likely help facilitate that move to green sooner. But we'll have to wait and see how that progresses. I have not seen those updated details, but I will be pulling those down tomorrow. And I'd imagine they're on the governor's website. So that's all I had on agenda item 5. I believe next up is the consent agenda.
Yep, that's next here. It is 6. Do we have any questions on the minutes or the... well, let's start with the minutes. Does anybody have comments there? Okay, not hearing any there. How about any questions on the check register?
Yes. Can I ask you about the 12 big, like $1,500 hydrant meters? Is that just for like super high users or what?
No, we're converting our old hydrant meters that require the users to call in the reads to the new Badger remote read hydrant meters so that we don't have to hound the folks that are using them to get the information. So.
Great.
And speaking of Badger, do we know when they're dumping data, what time of day?
I don't.
Like when I go look at my eye on water, it seems like some days it's picking it up overnight, and some days it's picking it up during the day? Is it just kind of a random transmission of the data off the meters?
I believe it is, Bob, because I've noticed the same thing. I think it tries to send a signal, and sometimes it depends on, you know, how if the cell tower can get the signal or not. So I've noticed the same thing. It does vary. A lot of times it'll stay the same time for you until it runs into a glitch, and then it starts trying to send again.
Yeah. Okay. Good. It seems to bounce around, but it's all straightened out within about 48 hours. So, yeah. Okay.
So no questions on the check register? Okay. How about, do we have any purchase orders?
No purchase orders tonight.
Okay. Is there a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
I move to approve the consent agenda.
So that was Karen made the motion, and a second from Bob?
Sure.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. Guess you want to shoot me that check register over tomorrow, Lisa, and I'll just sign it like I've been doing.
Yep, I'll do that.
Great, thank you. Item 7, questions on the department updates. I kind of like just going around the room. Should we start with Karen?
Does this cover the lien list?
We'll do that in the next agenda item, Karen.
Okay, then I don't have any questions.
Okay, how about Tim?
I had a question on the pigging on the thing. Are we going to be doing that annually, and is that going to create any kind of unanticipated damage, or is it better to do it on an annual basis?
We plan to do it annually, Tim. It's not something that's been done in the past. It was contemplated as part of the original Lost Canyon agreement. So the intent moving forward is to do it annually. Unintended damage, I'm not so concerned about damage per se. It's a foam, you know, it's a foam slug that we send up the line. Is there unintended consequences? Potentially. You know, it makes the operations team extremely nervous when we do it, because getting the pig stuck could happen, and then you've got to find it, and then what, right? Cut, potentially worst case scenario, cut it out. So that's a concern, but at this point we do plan to do it every year.
Okay, thanks.
You can have real water hammer issues.
Yeah.
Okay, Bob, any questions on the department updates?
So, curiosity item. So you had that picture in there with that big yellow worm. Is that the pig?
No, the pig's the blue kind of cone-shaped plug that you see floating in the water.
Okay, and what's
like Sam's report?
Big orange tube in there.
That tube. I don't have the picture in front of me, but it's likely the pump that's pumping the water out of that basin into the pond.
Oh, okay. It's just there all the time, kind of.
It's just the suction line, because that basin's not large enough to, you know, to capture all the water. So we got to move it out in the. You know, the basin wasn't designed right, so we're going to make some modifications to it so we don't need a pump in the future.
What's happening, Marty, with backflow? Because I know I'm non-compliant because I've left the house and mine's not going to get done for a couple months.
Oh, I don't think you're going to have any consequences. Stacy is sending out about 1,400 letters today, just to folks, informing them of our delay in the, you know, in the timeline on getting them tested. But we're having so many people actually going ahead and testing them. She's loading in several each week. I mean, just a ton each week. So they're probably in the long run won't be a ton of people that haven't done their testing, but you know, this is kind of a funky year. So, I think we'll definitely get all caught up, but she got those letters out, or is getting them out today or tomorrow. So she's producing them today.
Thank you. I'm done.
Yeah, I think we covered all those questions. I really liked Sam's report. I liked seeing that picture in there. I thought that was really helpful. So, okay, I think that takes us through item 7 and on to 8. Blaine, are you going to cover that for us?
Marty could probably cover it. So, Blaine, just so you know, the item 8 is just the approval of the certified tax liens that we do every year. Marty's on council's agenda for July 1st. Blaine, if you don't have any comments, I'm sure Marty could provide an overview.
Sure. I looked over the some of the stuff that Marty sent, and it looked fine to me.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate your help with it, too. We have refined that list that you have in your packet. We're down to $77,214 currently. And that's outstanding that we are at currently would be collecting. My guess is that number will go down over the next, you know, couple weeks before we get in front of council. I wanted to kind of do a little breakdown of that because that's a little higher than we typically have. So I wanted to just let you know a little bit about how much of it is water fees, standby fees, and then the various areas that those fees come from. It will take just a second. So water fees out of that $77,000 are about 48,000 of that is water, pertaining to water fees. So they would be metered usage fees. And there's about 30,000 of standby fees that make up that total of 77,000. And then to get a little bit deeper in the weeds, there's about $5,000 that's coming from community water on unpaid fees. But if you add in the fees that TCFC is not paying on a parcel that they're watering, that number is 15,000. So, just to give you an idea on community water. And then we have the Blackstone condos, which are and apartments that are over kind of by the fire station in the Canyons area. They make up about 13,000 of the delinquencies, and they are water users, so it's out of the water fees. And then the Silver Creek Village Center, that makes up about 18,100 of the standby fees. They're just not paying at this point. So I just kind of wanted to give you a breakdown of how those fees are coming together. The typical customers of Mountain Regional, excluding, you know, the two developments, the Blackstone and the Silver Creek Village Center, and then pulling out community water because they're brand new. They don't, you know, some of the people just still don't understand how the things work. There's only about 8 customers that make up that 5,000 gallons besides TCFC. It's about what we lean each year, around 30 grand or so. So it seems like we're on par with everything. We just have added in this, you know, the two developments, Silver Creek Business Center and also the Blackstone. Do you have any questions about that?
That was my question, Marty, is it seems like the Blackstone, TCFC, and whoever Liberty Capital Lending is, I get that an individual customer might be behind, but you know, these big companies certainly should pay their water bill.
We agree completely. Blackstone will be able to be, you know, shut off over time, you know, when we begin doing shutoffs again. They're kind of, I think, milking this thing that we're not shutting off, of course, and not paying. And then Liberty Capital, that's another one with just the Silver Creek Village Center. that's unusual too, because typically developers, like, well, you know, with promontory, you guys pay because you have to get in front of council, you know, so you don't want that to be an issue. But I don't know. Those are standby fees, so they're very difficult to, you know, to do anything about other than need them like this.
Very good. So any other questions there?
We'll update this, just so you know, so it's up to date before we get to council. There's always some stragglers, you know, in the next couple of weeks that come on that will pay. So my guess is this number will be a little less, but when we present this to council, it'll be all up to date. Just FYI.
Great work, Marty.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I think that takes us through our agenda. Is there anything else we need to cover, Scott? Anybody have any comments?
Nothing from my end.
Okay. Well, the staff, you guys did a great job again this month. So thanks so much. And we'll stand adjourned at 8:01.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
Night, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.